There's a lot of intrigue in the Jewish family. I love these stories, boy. Jacob, last week's Torah portion, lies to his father Isaac, deceives him. Rebecca, his mother, tells him the lie to his father. Laban then deceives Jacob. Jacob is of such poor character that he actually says to his mother, "Well, Mom, I'd do it, but what happens if I get discovered?" Great motive for morality, isn't it? Laban then deceives Jacob over the amount of time that was needed to secure a wife. And then he tries to deceive him over getting property, the sheep, but Jacob wises up to the situation. And then Rachel, fleeing from her father Laban, this is the part that most people, I think, don't remember, okay, steals her father's idols and keeps them, steals them and puts them under her saddle of whatever it is that she's riding, a camel or whatever, okay, and so steals the idols from her father's house. We had a professor at HUC, Hanan Brichto, a Bible professor, who used to say, "There's nobody in the Bible you'd want to be related to." I mean, what kind of example is this for good Jewish boys and girls? And not only did they deceive one another, lie to one another. At the beginning, Jacob blames others and refuses to take responsibility for his ethical failure. His mother tells him to put on skins so that he'll feel like his brother and purposefully deceive his father. Rebekah instructs him what to do, and he does not refuse. He just goes along with it, like he's inert, like he's got nothing to do with it. When he protests that he might be caught, his mother takes the curse upon himself. He's not even courageous enough or man enough to take the responsibility. Sort of unbelievable. While in Haran with Laban, so Jacob leaves Israel, walks across the Fertile Crescent to Haran, Jacob learns that the shoe goes on the other foot as well. When he's deceived, when he wakes up in the morning with the wrong bride, now that's a deception. Okay. When he has to work 14 years to marry the woman he loves instead of just 7, he has to ask, inevitably, "How did this happen to me? How did this happen to me? Whose fault is this?" Now, on the one hand, it's divine punishment for his sin. After all, he deceived, and so he was deceived. Okay? What he did to somebody else was done to him. So you can see Jacob as Laban as the perpetrator. But really, the fault is Jacob's, isn't it? He's recompensed for his own actions. He put himself in this situation. He hangs around with deceiving people. No matter who committed the deed, Jacob can learn that he is involved in what happened to him. I mean, he can see his own character reflected in his uncle Laban. And he can say to himself, "You know what? I can see myself as the victim here, or I can see myself as the responsible party." He learns that responsibility for this situation lies with him and not with someone else. Jacob turns around Laban's attempt to deceive him with the sheep, and he beats Laban in his own game. I don't know whether you know the story, but he's supposed to take a certain amount of the property, a certain amount of sheep, and Laban tells him that he can have the spotted sheep or the striped sheep, which was a matter of genetics, and Jacob turns around the game and gets more sheep than his uncle Laban. The point is that he plays by the rules. Laban has set out which sheep Jacob is to get, and Jacob, even before genetics is known about, right, Jacob manages to turn the tactic to his own advantage and get more property. But for once, he plays within the rules. The rabbis say, "Maaseh avot siman levanim." The deeds of our ancestors are a sign for us. I was shocked when Brichto said, "You don't want to be related to anybody in the Bible." But that was my youthful exuberance, right? The reality is that you don't want to be related to anybody in the Bible because the Bible is full of real people. Its character is just like us. I mean, these are things that we do as well. We tend to place responsibility for our difficulties on our circumstances, on the actions of others. And we also assume that our emotions, what we feel, we have a right to feel. Meaning that we feel what we feel, and so we should act upon our feelings. Because after all, whatever those feelings happen to be, they're ours, and we have a right to them, and there should be a response to the emotions. But the Torah portion this week says something else to us. It indicates to us that we're not victims of our emotions or victims of our situations, rather that we and God together are in control. What happens to us, what we feel, what our reactions are to the world around us, we're the boss. And we are called to follow a mission. We're called to understand why we're in this situation and to take care of it, to act to repair the world. We too often refuse responsibility because we don't want to take the consequences of our choices, because the choices may be buried days, weeks, or years ago, or they may be a result of emotions that we think, hey, because I'm feeling this way, that's the way I ought to react. So in this week's Torah portion, Jacob comes home from Laban. He spent 20 years, not 20 good years, but he did get two wives and a number of children. And he fears encountering his brother Esau. Now he's got a good reason to encounter his brother Esau, right? You remember that Esau was a hairy man? What did that mean? Okay, he was a brute. I mean, Rebecca was right. She wanted Jacob to get the inheritance. Why? Because Jacob was a good guy. Okay, he was at least intelligent. Okay, and he was going to be able to carry on the covenant. Esau was a brute. And Esau was not fit to carry on the covenant. And when we say brute, what do we mean? We mean a guy whose character is questionable. So Jacob rightfully fears that he's going to get wiped out by his brother, whom he has deceived after all, right? It's not even Esau's fault. But Jacob now takes responsibility for his actions, something he was not willing to do 20 years earlier. He divides his family and his servants into different camps so that they could be defended. And he sends gifts to Esau in order to placate him. And then, and this is critical, when he encounters his brother after trying to soften him up, he speaks to him. Something that must have been, if you think about it, very painful. But he knows that healing cannot take place unless he's willing to confront his brother face to face. The Bible doesn't record what they talked about. There's a little bit of conversation in there, but I imagine it was much longer. And I'd like to think that Jacob said, you know what? God meant for me to get the covenant, but I could have done it nicer. And you know what? I can't blame you for being angry. But things came out the way they were supposed to be. So let me apologize, and that's the reason I sent the gifts. Esau, for his part, seems to have forgiven Jacob. I mean, it's a startling story. If you're reading it for the first time, you think, this guy's about to get really messed up. I mean, Jacob is about to encounter an army of hundreds of men, and his whole family is going to be wiped out. Instead, Esau accepts the gifts, does not complain about Jacob, and offers to help Jacob in his travels, which Jacob doesn't accept. Each man appears to have accommodated the past and accepted responsibility for his own life, his position in the world. So how did Jacob get to this place? It appears that at least two things helped him to come to grips with this reality. The deception that he had to undergo to get there, and his own marriage. We get to a point in life that we must decide who is responsible for what happens to us and what we feel. With the advantage of 100 plus years of psychology, we know that our inner life is something that we try to control, but we may not entirely be able to either understand or control. But we can manage it. Our situation that we're in comes from decisions that we have made along life's path. It's not someone else's fault. It's because we have put ourselves here. And our interactions with other people are of our own determining. Life often seems beyond our control. I find people today, I've been in a lot of conversations with people about the current circumstances. It's interesting to hear people talk about why this has happened. We tend to imagine, as in this circumstance, that someone else did this to us. But the truth is that we've done it to ourselves. We do not entirely control the events around us, but by controlling where we put ourselves and our expectations, we do in fact control our lives. And the same is true with our emotions. There are inputs that we cannot control, like our early childhood upbringing, that often does determine our emotional reactions. But nonetheless, we are the only ones who can control how we interact. I know a man who for 40 years has kept a rubber band on his left wrist. Anytime he feels anger, he snaps the rubber band. Why? He doesn't ever want to react out of anger. I see husbands and wives reacting to one another snippily, with veiled threats, with ideas that seem to be put downs. And it's just a matter of how they genuinely but consistently interact. And it ain't necessary. It's not necessary. People feel as though they're reacting according to what they feel, and so they're entitled to it. But it's not the case. We have the opportunity to control something of how we feel and all of how we react. This friend of mine is very much in control of his emotions. But from time to time, I see him go like this. He doesn't control everything. And some situations just get the better of him. But never will you ever see him angry in terms of the way he expresses himself to someone around him. So often people say things out of raw emotion, or we do things out of raw emotion. Anybody ever been in a fender bender? Yeah. Were you angry? Did you blame the other guy? Always. It's always my first impulse, right? Must have been somebody else's fault. Sometimes it has been. But the reaction is because we defend ourselves. We seek vengeance against the spouse who hurt our feelings. We get angry and we bring up old hurts. We expect others to make us happy when we can't make ourselves happy. Truth be told, all of this is passing responsibility onto someone else. No partner in life can make you happy. No partner in life is responsible for your emotions. Hopefully, some of the time, you're actually in sync and you increase one another's happiness. Hopefully, the other will take your happiness into account as part of her life or his life and say to him or herself, you know what, I want to do something that increases how this person experiences joy. And I think that's what marriage is for. But when we expect of the people around us that they will understand how we feel and serve us, it's always going to be a mistake. We live in a society in which we expect our partners to meet our needs. That's just not realistic. In Jacob's case, he learned to meet his own needs and to make plans for his own circumstances. And I wonder what he said to his beloved wife, Rachel. You know, the one whom he really loved when she stole her father's idols. He was a transformed man. He didn't need to deceive anymore. Was he angry? Was he repentant? Did he say to her, "You know, you'll never learn"? Or did he say, "You know what, been there myself, but I've learned it's just not right. We've got to return them to your dad." In the midst of Jacob's return to the land, after he divides his camp for protection and settles down for the night, he wrestles with an angel. His name is changed. He's no longer the man that he was. He's a new man. Now, I don't know whether you believe that people can transform themselves. I think that with a lot of hard work and a lot of understanding, it can happen. But such is the path we all walk. You see, we were all Jacob. We were all young. We were all rash. We all blamed other people for what happened to us and put our emotions onto others. But there is a time, like Jacob, when we wrestle with the angel. Over the course of a lifetime, we accept responsibility for ourselves and accept that we must deal with our world as independent beings, attempting to determine God's plan for our lives and act accordingly. It may sometimes feel lonely to have to take responsibility for who we are. And that's why I thoroughly believe that God has a plan for everyone's life. The question is discovering it, taking responsibility for it, and implementing it in the world. Our goal is to look around us and to be a blessing to all those whom we love. Together we can create, we can bring God into the world, accepting responsibility for our part in that world, and working to create peace and harmony in our families first, and then out to those around us. May we all have the opportunity to wrestle with the angel. We will all of us come away limping, but God willing, we will all come away blessed as well.